a heart to serve. And so this morning, what I want to talk about is kind of a little bit about the context in which we serve in and how we could really make an incredible impact with those that we serve simply by viewing people the way that God does. If we could view the people that we serve the way that God would want us to, I believe we can make an incredible impact. You know, this morning what I'm going to do is I'm going to share a variation of a sermon I did last week for Central Jersey. So Central Jersey might hear it twice, or at least a variation of it. But that's how God works, right? Sometimes we need to hear things twice anyway. So what we're going to be doing is, if you would, turn your Bibles to Luke chapter 7. We're going to be reading Luke chapter 7, verses 36 through 50. In Central Jersey, we've been doing a series that we started a few weeks ago, Questions Jesus Asked. And each Sunday, we take a question that he asked and really focus on it and see how it could apply to us today. And last week, our question was, do you see this woman? And it comes from this passage right here in Luke chapter 7. And we're going to read verses 36 through 50. The Bible says, now one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him. So he went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. When a woman who had lived a sinful life in that town learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster jar of perfume. And as she stood behind him at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. When the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is a sinner. Jesus answered him, Simon, I have something to tell you. Tell me, teacher, he said. Two men owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed him 500 denarii, and the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, so he canceled the debts of both. Now, which of them will love him more? Simon replied, I suppose the one who had the bigger debt canceled. You have judged correctly, Jesus said. Then he turned toward the woman and said to Simon, do you see this woman? I came into your house. You did not give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman from the time I entered has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not put oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, for she loved much. But he who has been forgiven little loves little. Then Jesus said to her, your sins are forgiven. The other guests began to say among themselves, who is this who even forgives sins? Jesus said to the woman, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. You know, this is an incredible passage of scripture. When you understand first century culture, you understand that it was a great offense. It was rude for them not to really acknowledge Jesus in the way that the sinful woman did. And what's amazing about this passage is, you know, it's often referred to as the story of the sinful woman. And, you know, you read this passage and you see here is this woman that clearly has a background, clearly has a story that perhaps many people knew, that Jesus definitely knew. And what happens in this case, you know, you see, you know, it's believed, obviously, that she was a prostitute. And so when she would pour out her perfume, what that would have signified in the moment is that she was going, this was the end of that life. That perfume would have been something that was used in that line of business. And so when she used it, it was kind of signifying, this is the end. I'm no longer returning to that life. And I think about, here she is in this woman, in this room, and basically being completely ignored, except by Jesus. Jesus had a way of acknowledging and seeking out those who felt invisible. Jesus had a way of connecting with people when everyone else was seeking not to connect with them. Jesus acknowledged her. And I wonder, you know, when you read this story, could this have been maybe even the first time, or definitely the first time in a long time, that she was actually being acknowledged? That she mattered. That she was significant. And in this case, significant to the Son of God. I would imagine that encounter by itself completely changed her life. Jesus acknowledging someone that perhaps was feeling invisible. And you know, it's interesting because Jesus asked this question right in the middle of this whole conversation. The question is, do you see this woman? Do you see this woman? You might wonder, he goes on to explain kind of, you know, what he sees and what she did. And you know, he was trying to say, hey, look what she did. He was trying to point them to see, look at what she did from the moment I walked in. He was highlighting the fact that she was completely focused on him. But you know, we need to consider this question in a much deeper way. Because I believe you could read through this and kind of gloss over the idea that Jesus was asking, do you see this woman? Do you really see this woman? You know, what's interesting is why Jesus saw her differently than everyone else around them. You could see it in the language and what they were thinking about. You see, it says, if this man were a prophet, this is what the Pharisees are thinking. If this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is a sinner. See, the Pharisees saw the kind of woman. Jesus saw the actual woman. The Pharisee was focused on a label, a stereotype, a label that was put on her by society and perhaps people around her. Jesus looked right in and saw the actual woman. So you see, do you see this woman is a very profound question. Because you could visibly see someone and not really see the actual person. You could be in a room filled with people and you could see them visibly and yet not see who they really are. See, we could see people visibly and labels might pop into our minds. Ideas might pop into our minds that actually have nothing to do with the actual person. And I believe, you know, do you see this woman? I think we've got to ask ourselves, do we truly see people? Do we see them for who they really are? You know, when you turn on the news these days, it can get very depressing very quickly. You know, clearly there's race is a topic that's being brought up. You see it over and over again. You see it on the news. Even I listen to sports radio. It's seeped into sports radio now. There's conversations. People are talking about it. It's pretty clear that there's a problem right now. No matter how you look at it, there is a problem right now. You know, there's problems with race. And different people stand in different places. And, you know, when you look at the news, there's, you know, the highlight seems to be this day that there's problems with police and people of color. The problem isn't limited to police because it's an issue all around us. It's a people problem. And so we've got to really see that this is the context that we live in. So, you know, we've got to be able to acknowledge what's going on around us. Yes, in the last 50 years, there's been a great deal of progress made in the area of race relations. But at the same time, there's still such a long way to go. And as Christians, I want to challenge you. We simply can't stick our heads in the sand as if not talking about it is actually going to make it go away. We can't decide that I won't look at the news, I won't deal with it, and somehow magically that's going to go away. We as Christians are about people. We've got to understand the context in which we live. Now listen, I understand, I watch the news. It gets discouraging to watch things happen. Sometimes you might feel hopeless even about things changing. Now listen, I'll tell you quite honestly, I don't have all the answers. I'm actually quite comfortable with that because I follow someone who does. And I'm here to tell you that with Jesus, there is always hope. Jesus is the answer. And I realize that some have even felt like, well, that Jesus is the answer seems to be a pat answer at times. But I'm not telling you this just to give you a pat answer. I'm telling you this because I believe it with all of our heart. Because I believe that Jesus has given us an example of what it is to really see a person. I'm going to give you an example of what it looks like when you can see the actual person and not the stereotype. There's a story about a brother here in our church about 5 years ago went through a very difficult time. It was a very dark time in his life. He faced some really difficult challenges. And he got really, really discouraged and just started pushing away everyone who loved him most. He was dealing with discouragement at a very deep level. And he was trying to deal with it in his own way, on his own. And unfortunately, he ended up in a very dark moment. After a midweek service right here in this building, he decided he didn't want to be in this world anymore. He called 911. He went behind this very building. He called 911 and stated, and I quote, "A big black man just threatened me with a gun," and then proceeded to give a description of the gunman. He described himself, what he looked like, and what he was wearing. Naturally, police responded because based on the call, there was a gunman on the loose in North Brunswick. And so they arrived to deal with the situation. Within minutes, there were 12 to 13 police officers surrounding this brother with their guns and lasers fixed on him. They yelled for him to drop the gun, take his hands out of his pocket, but he did not comply. Well, one of the last officers to arrive at the scene, when he arrived, he approached and saw all the officers with their gun drawn, so he drew his gun as well. And as he drew his gun, you know, he relayed this story to us. He says, "As I drew my gun and I looked at this man's eyes, when I looked at him directly in his eyes, I saw that he was a man who was hurting and not a danger to anyone but himself. He looked directly at this brother and truly saw him. He said that when he looked at him, it was very clear that he was sad. And so what he did was, he put his gun back in the holster, went against police protocol, went to subdue this brother, ultimately helped to tackle him. And when they subdued him, they realized that he did not have a gun and had placed a call to 911 himself. You know, last week, that officer came to church here. We got to acknowledge him. We got to thank him. And we said, you know, we want to thank you for seeing our brother. We want to thank you for seeing that he was hurting and in need of help and not a criminal seeking to hurt anyone else. We thanked him. We said, thank you for seeing the man and not the stereotype. You know, the truth is, he didn't even want to come to church. He is a man of faith, but he didn't want to come because he didn't want to be acknowledged. Ironic twist to this is that a few years back, we had a 9/11 day of service, and what we decided to do was to honor first responders. And every Sunday, we have a police officer on duty here. And as God would have it, he was on duty here that day. As God would have it, this brother, fully recovered, walks into the building, and the first face he sees is that police officer. They share an embrace. The brother thanks him for saving his life. He walks in, and you know, we were honoring first responders. So right here in front, there were two police officers here. We're honoring the two police officers, not knowing that right before stood someone who saved the life of our brother. We honored him without even knowing what he did. It was an amazing twist that I believe God orchestrated all together. You know, and what was amazing about it is that this officer, we got with him last week and we sat down to discuss the whole story with him. And, you know, and the brother said, look, I want to just thank you again for saving my life. And his answer was, I didn't save your life. God did. I was just an instrument. This is what's possible when someone decides to look at the actual person and not the kind of person. This is what happens when we could put aside any stereotypes, any ideas that we may have, and see the actual person. Stories like this give us hope. And hope changes everything. But the question remains for each one of us, do you see the actual person? You know, I became a disciple, and as a disciple, I've been battling my selfishness. And the truth is, we like to say that when we get out of that water, everything, every thought, every inclination that you have mysteriously disappears. Now, the consequence of all that is gone. But we bring our garbage right into the church. And we've got to really ask ourselves if we want to see the change in this world, we've got to be that very change. We've got to make sure that we are, in fact, seeing the person and not the stereotype. Do you judge people on how they look? Race, complexion, how they dress. If we're to impact those we're serving, we have to cleanse our own hearts first. and make sure that there's nothing lingering around that doesn't belong in the heart of a disciple. I've seen disciples judge people off of the worst moment in that person's life. I've seen disciples, and what happens is, I read an article on disciples today a while back, and it gave me a great illustration to this. It's like somebody taking a picture of that moment, and that's all they remember you by is that picture. Is that really what we are, a moment? We so easily can judge people like the world does. We must make sure that we truly see people as God would see them. As disciples, we must resolve to see the person. We must resolve to look into the person and really see the actual person. And then, let me tell you, there is no more important time than right now for this. We must seize the moment to be a light in this world. Our diversity and love for one another stand out in this world. You know, we went to a Chili's right on Route 1. It was actually me and Harold. Harold is here somewhere. And, you know, started to share my faith with the waiter, inviting him to church. I said, yeah, it's a great church, very diverse, you know, and really encouraging him. And he goes, oh, yeah, I know what church that is. I'm like, well, how do you know? He goes, well, the other day there was a table here, and there were four guys. It was an Asian guy, a white guy, a black guy, and a Hispanic guy. And they invited me to church. And I said, this is not normal. And you know, it just encouraged my soul that simply looking at different people loving one another, having a meal together, stood out to this waiter. They hadn't been there in months. It stood out to them. We've got to realize that we need to be a light during these dark times. We must resist the temptation to become Facebook philosophers and air our opinions that divide people. I'm not even on Facebook anymore. But let me tell you, people put on Facebook what they want people to see. And then sometimes sin seeps out, and guess what? Trust me, there are people judging you on that rant that you just put out. We've got to choose to be a light to those we serve. We've got to choose to really see the person and be a light. You know what? That experience that you have with someone of a different race might be the first positive one they have in their life. You can make an impact in that person's life long beyond that day and that project. I totally love it. I want to tie this to how we serve with this last point. It's about people, not projects. You know, if somebody tells me, well, you know, we got to go because we have a hope project. All right, I'm a good disciple. I'm going to go. Somebody tells me, hey, we're going to go change someone's life. I'm running. I want to be there because I want to help people. That's what I want to do. As disciples, that's what we want to do. And we've got to be careful because I think sometimes those pictures get a little blurred. And we make it more about projects than the actual people. You know, one time several years ago during Superstorm Sandy, we were in someone's house, and as we're in the house, we're like really working hard, helping to clean everything out, and you know, the house had been flooded, and you know, it hit me as I'm there, I'm like, wow, you know, here are all of us, Hope Volunteers, strangers in their house, and I'm thinking, you know, we're just working along here, but this family, they've got memories in this house. They ate dinner right there. They had a laugh right there. They shared an important moment right there. And very quickly, what ended up happening, I started realizing, I'm just not doing manual labor. I'm in someone's house that has many moments and memories for them. It made me really empathize with the people, the actual people that we were helping. And you know, one thing that really stood out to me is, we so love the Hope Scouts. We were in there, and we're cleaning stuff out, and we're trying to help these people. And then here come the Hope Scouts with a tray of cookies. And they just start crying. The people that we were helping for an hour or two. I'm not saying they weren't grateful. I know they were grateful. But what broke them was a tray of cookies from little kids. And I want you to consider that people, when they get connected with personally, how you serve them goes so much further. Was it really about the cookies, or was it simply the hair of these little kids taking time to serve them in a very personal way? This is why it's so important that we remember it's about people, not projects. We've got to be careful not to draw too much pride from a project that we're supporting. But remember that it's about people. It's not about your project. Sometimes I've seen we get frustrated. Well, I want to do my project, and we get so wrapped up about the project that we forget this is about people. We've got to remember that. As disciples, as Hope volunteers, we must see people and not stereotypes. We must seek empathy and not judgment. If you don't understand what's going on around you when you see people hurting, seek empathy, not judgment. Because you don't understand doesn't mean it isn't really happening. And it's an incredible insult when people are hurting and then they're looked at as if, well, I don't really know if this is an issue. If it's an issue enough for them to cry, it's to be an issue enough for you, because as disciples, when one part of the body suffers, all of it suffers. We must have that kind of heart. We've got to see that there's no greater time to make an impact in today's society by simply being disciples. When we show up and there's a diverse crowd, it stands out. You don't have to say a word. Your presence is a sermon. Your presence gives hope to those around you. When we truly see people, God can make incredible things happen. You know, the brother I shared about his story, you know, ironically, last week, he went in for a job interview at the very institution that he was admitted to when this thing happened. He was offered the job at that very institution. That brother, you know, you might be wondering, well, this is, you know, that's a tough story to put out there. He wanted to put out there because he said, if anybody can be helped, I want God to get the glory for what he's done in my life. Jesus is able to turn it all around. He's able to take your darkest moment and make it a turning point for you, for your biggest victory. This brother was down and out, but he wasn't done because Jesus wasn't done. Because Jesus was going to use that moment as a turning point to ultimately show his glory through his life. When we serve people at that moment, they may be in a dark place. They might be in a discouraged place. But you can be an instrument to help someone have a turning point, where that dark moment could be a turning point to a victory. Let's not forget, that's who we serve. That's the example, that we really be like Jesus to everyone around us. Thank you, and God bless.